I was in seminary, I had enough sense at my age, I was around 38, 40, I had enough sense to keep my mouth shut. After you've been around our work for a long time, you know there's a lot of different opinions. And some of them really matter, and some of them don't. And so while I was there, I kept my mouth shut. They didn't know what I believed. And I believed in the seventh trumpet rapture. And there may even be a split rapture. I won't deny that. But I don't right now accept it. However, if everybody goes and I'm still here, then I'll believe in a split rapture, or I'll hope in a split rapture. But I believe in the seventh trumpet rapture, and I kept my mouth shut. And so I also believed that the Antichrist was not going to come out of Europe. And I did not believe in the first of the week rapture. So I kept my mouth shut, which is hard for me to do. But finally, I woke up, and when I got up here, and I decided slowly and gradually I would try to work that in here without getting run off. Well, I made it. Here I am. And I haven't been run off yet, but you never know. Now, I'm going to show you some things, and you got the whole thing in front of you. By the time 2006 rolled around, there was no question in my mind that the things I had taught were correct, because everything fell into place just like the Bible said. And so only thing I was uncertain of, when is this attack going to occur against Israel? Well, I'm going to give you what I believe about it. I believe it will occur in the next administration. I'm not talking about the rapture. I believe that the actual war, the last war of this age, will begin when the Antichrist attacks Israel from what was known as Greater Syria. Or you can call it Assyria, either one, they're both correct. Now, I was taught that when I was young. I believed it. I hope I'm not hard-headed, because I changed my mind. If you don't ever change your mind, you'll never learn anything. And I only change if the Bible fits it. If the Bible doesn't fit it, I certainly don't try to teach it. Well, now by this time, which was it was 2006, when I finally made up my mind about when this attack was going to occur. I knew it had to occur sometime in the next century. This was the second book I wrote, called Tribulation Triad. You'll find part of this in there. By that time, I was certain that I knew what was going to happen up until the time Israel was attacked by Syria. Everything has fallen into place, and I know that this is on our doorstep. I cannot give you a day, a week, a month, or a year, but I will tell you I am convinced that you're going to see Israel attacked to begin the tribulation period, what they call the tribulation period, and I believe that will occur during the latter portion of the coming administration, whoever gets elected. Don't ask me who's going to get elected. I can't predict that from the Bible. God puts people up that he wants to put up there, and he takes people down that he wants to take down. And I don't know, sometimes he may just let it go the way it's going. I don't know. But I do know that all the events he said are in place for this to occur during the next administration, and I do not believe Israel will be attacked by the Islamic nations until late in the next administration. Obama immediately instituted his pullout program. I'm starting on one. Immediately after replacing George Bush, Obama is responsible for the final Middle East war. Many people told me at first, Brother McElmurray, I believe he's a Muslim. Well, I don't believe he's a Muslim, but I don't know what he is. Now, I don't think he knows what he is, but the minister he had was a free the slaves preacher. And he still believed that we were under the yoke. And I listened to him preach. He preached some of the most ungodly things I ever heard in my life. Obama sat under that for a long time. Well, what's the difference between being a Muslim and sitting under that kind of teaching? And when he first went over to North Africa and went in and made apologies for everything we'd ever done to those poor Muslims and talked about how beautiful the strains that were at night when the actually songs of Islam and they're going, ah, yeah, and they went through the night air. I don't think he's a Muslim, but I guarantee you he's more Muslim than he is Christian. And I guarantee you that he is a man who has caused us to be in this shape. And listen, he's a charmer. Look at the people that follow him. Well, anyway, I believe God placed Obama in office like he placed the Pharaoh of the Exodus in order to accomplish his purposes. He also did that to the ruler of Babylon, and he has set others up at times. God is still in control down here. I don't believe in predestination. I don't believe God chose one to be saved, one to be lost, one to be saved, another to be lost, and he picked it all out in the council halls of eternity. I don't believe that. But I do believe in the foreknowledge of God. I think God knows everything that's ever happened, and I think God knows everything that's going to happen for all eternity. That's not predestination. That's telling you God is in charge. And so I have tried very hard to follow the dictates of the Bible. When it conflicted with my scientific knowledge, I have not preached it. And I have always discovered afterward that the scientific knowledge I had that I did not preach was much better in the Bible when I found it. So the Bible is an inspired book. It is inspired from the cover to the end. And there is nothing in there that cannot be explained under God's rule in the Bible. Nothing. I'll guarantee it. You can ask me any question you want about it, and I'll be delighted to try to answer it. Now, this first part here, you can read for yourself. It was written in 2006. And it goes right on over. And you can read it all the way down to Ezekiel 38:16. I've taught that here in this church ever since one family left, who I will not name, because I knew that I was a gone goslin if I ever let them know what I believed. You say, well, you should have done it either way. Well, tell that to God, because God has laid it on my heart at times. I ask him for wisdom. I ask him for discernment. I ask him for understanding. The Bible, that's what Solomon asked for. That's what an old missionary Baptist preacher, our kind of preacher. I mean, our kind of preacher. He called me, and I thought he was just an old man that wanted somebody to talk to him. After he called me, he humbled me. That old man knew a whole lot more about the Bible than I did. He knew a whole lot more about God than I did. He wasn't the one getting a blessing from me just by me listening to him. And he taught me a lot of things about life, and he taught me a lot of things that missionary Baptists should all think about. He said, now Solomon asked God for discernment, wisdom, and understanding. God gave it to him because Solomon was going to use it for the right reason. Now forget about how Solomon ended up. That's not God's fault. But he gave him wisdom. He gave him understanding. He gave him discernment. He said, if you'll ask God, he'll give it to you. I started asking him, and pretty soon I began to understand a lot of scriptures that they didn't conflict with missionary Baptist doctrine. And I wasn't being one-minded, one-sided. I understood them. And so I said, well, I got humbled. I've been stomped on several times by the Lord. And I thank God for every stomp he put on me. Because you don't ever learn anything. Most of what I have learned have been when I was irritated. And I finally figured out the reason I was irritated because the man was right. And so I just said, okay. Now we're going to go through this because I now know when this attack is going to occur. Sometime during the latter portion of the next administration. Are you sure? As sure as I can be. But I can't tell you the day, the week, the month, or the year. She said, what are you going to do if you're wrong? I'm just going to tell you I was wrong. That's the only way I know to learn anything. Now in Ezekiel 38:16, he says, and thou shalt come up against my people of Israel as a cloud to cover the land. It shall be in the latter days. A lot of people say that the 38th chapter of Ezekiel is about the last part when they come back. Those are the descendants of Gog and Magog. They are the descendants of Gog and Magog. These are the Magogs they are descended from. Thou shalt come up against my people of Israel as a cloud to cover the land. It shall be in the latter days, and I will bring thee against my land, that the heathen may know me, and I will be sanctified in thee, O Gog, before their eyes. Gog is not the chief prince of Magog. He is the chief prince of Meshach and Tubal. The Bible is very clear, very concise on that. Well, I thought tonight, this was in my book, and I'm convinced the Lord led me on this. I'm not smart enough to do this. I wasn't smart enough, spiritually smart enough to do this. And all of a sudden, the training that I've had in my life, I began to understand why God put me where He did. I never did anything voluntarily. Everywhere I went, they sent me. Every time they had a change in my MOS, my serial number, everything, they did it. And there I was in places I never dreamed I'd go. But God did that. So bear in mind my background in Ezekiel 38, 8 through 16. Now, you're going to see why I gave you this single copy of Ezekiel 38, 8 through 16. Because we're going to go and take a look at the aftermath of this attack after God has destroyed Gog's army by the greatest geological holocaust that has ever occurred in the Holy Land of Israel. Let me tell you something. Man is not going to destroy the earth. I was taught that when I was a child. And after I went through the National Security Agency, we were never concerned about Israel destroying the world, about the Arabs destroying the world, about anybody destroying the world, particularly Arabs. We weren't worried about it. But I got pushed into a corner, and so did everybody else in the National Security Agency. And if we didn't put something in there that went along with what they said to get more money, they kept kicking it back to us. And so that happened. And there I was. I'm making no excuses. Say, you should have stood up to them. No, I had a wife, and I had, six children, one on the way. Had another one when we got back here. We were happy because we were going to church all the time. But we just didn't have a lot of money. So I just put some stuff in there and used words like, unusual. You can take that anyway. Or you use words like, what's a good one for that? Unique. They made me write reports for officers when I was working in the federal office building in Kansas City, and I had this one guy that was an absolute. I trained Arabs to be meteorologists. I had this one guy. He was absolutely worthless from start to finish, lazy, wouldn't do anything, didn't show up for work for months sometimes. Now, I had him for a long time, and finally they asked me to write his OER, and I wrote it. And I gave it to Colonel Miller, and he gave it to Colonel Dozell, who was head of the unit that I was in there. We wore civilian clothes. He came back down, he said, we can't send this, Mac. I said, why not? I said, it's the truth, and you know it's the truth. He said, we can't do that. He said, this man is kin to the crown prince of Saudi. I thought, what am I going to do? I'm not going to lie. I will not. Well, I did, but in a subtle way, if there is such a thing. I use words like unique all the way through it. Most unusual man I ever met. And when I got through with that thing, using all those words that you, a lot of words have 6 or 7 meanings. Well, it looked like this guy was Prince Charming, and they accepted it. I'm sorry I did it, but I at least told you about it. Now, when I got down to this part here, I said, now let's take a look at the aftermath of this attack. God has destroyed Antichrist's army by the greatest geological holocaust that has ever occurred in the land of Israel. I used the King James translation. I didn't use anything else. So, go on over to number 3. Go down to verse 9. Behold, it has come, it is done, saith the Lord God. This is the day that I have spoken. Now let's look at verse 8 above it. I'm going to read this because I want to make sure I don't keep you over. And I want to make sure, because I want him to preach here. And if I go over, there ain't much of a chance of it. So anyway, I'm going to read this to you. Because it says, and I wrote this thing back in the year 2006, I believe. And wrote this particular thing. But I put it in my book in 1976. That's a long time ago. I didn't change it any. It's in there. He says, informs us that the day of the Lord is done. The events daily appearing in the Middle East are presently leading us to that great day of the Lord. Finally, it will be over. God's wrath will have passed, and a remnant of the Jews still in physical flesh will dig themselves out of the ashes of the great tribulation period. They will begin to build a new millennial world with their Messiah, Jesus Christ, as their King and as their God. Verse 9. Well, verse 8 says, and they shall dwell in the cities that shall go forth, they shall set fire and burn the weapons. How do you burn metal? How do you burn tanks? You smelter it. They called it firing it. You still call it firing in a kilter, but that, he says, they shall set on fire and burn the weapons. He's talking about smeltering. And he's talking, that's what they call burning. Burn the weapons, both the shields and the bucklers. Folks, this last war is going to have shields and bucklers in it, and bows and arrows, but hand staves and the spears, and they shall burn them with fire 7 years. Well, it's going to take them 7 years to clean up this mess, and they're going to beat them into plowshares. That's exactly what's going to happen. They're going to smelter them. They're going to reuse all that metal. They're going to have metal scattered from one end of Israel to the other. After the Battle of Armageddon, they're going to have metal. They're going to have tanks. You can't imagine what's going to be over there. Their own tanks, the tanks of their enemies, and they will melt them and smelter them into weapons. They're not weapons, but instruments of agriculture, instruments of botany, instruments of the things that are used to fertilize a land where there is no war. In the day whereof I have spoken, and they shall burn them with fire 7 years. It's going to take 7 years to clean up this mess. That, you say, well, listen, it's going to take them 7 years. It says so, and I believe it. So that they shall take no wood out of the field. Well, they're not going to take any wood out of the field. How are they going to do this? How are they going to burn weapons? They don't take any wood out of the field. Neither cut down any out of the forest. For they shall burn the weapons with fire, and they shall spoil those that spoil them, and rob them that rob them, saith the Lord God. Verse 10 advises us that the wood will not be used to provide the fire necessary for smelting the metal in the weapons of war. They will take the oil of the Arab nations, and they're going to have a bunch of it. They will take the oil of the Arab nations that spoil them in the tribulation period. They'd be crazy to use wood. That wood, they're preservers of the woods. They're preservers of it. They will use their oil to produce the fire that fires the metal into useful peacetime products. This part I was sure of. When they were going to attack, when I wrote those first two books, I didn't know. And so I just said, okay, Lord, I understand this last part. I'll put this in the book, but I can't put in there. He didn't want it in there. So I didn't put it in there, and I put this in there because I believe he did. Now, let's take a look at verse 11. And it shall come to pass in that day that I will give unto Gog, a place there of graves in Israel, the valley of the passengers on the east of the sea. That is the Salton Sea. That is the Dead Sea. It has two or three different names, but that is the Dead Sea. What's on the east of the Dead Sea? Moab, Ammon, and Edom. And they run together. That's exactly where Jordan is. That group, just look at them on a map back in that day and time. That's exactly where Jordan is. All three of them fit very neatly and perfectly and even fit the shape of that. He says, and it shall stop the noses of the passengers. It's going to be a smelly place. And there shall they bury Gog and all his multitude, and they shall call it the valley of Haman Gog. Haman? The valley of Haman Gog. Well, I'll be. And 7 months shall the house of Israel be burying of them. Well, I won't get to that. Let's look at 11. Verse 11 describes the massive cleanup of the millions of corpses from the Battle of Armageddon. They will clutter the hills of Galilee, Samaria, and Judea. They will bury them in a valley. They will name the valley of Haman Gog. Haman Gog means multitude of Gog. Gog is the chief prince of Meshach and Tubal. And Meshach and Tubal were what were known as the Assyrian Empire or Greater Syria. Take your pick. They're the same. And Gog is the Antichrist. So this valley can be referred to as the graveyard of the Antichrist. And that is exactly what I call it. The exact location is unknown. It's east of the Dead Sea. That's all I can tell you. We are merely told it will be the east of the Dead Sea. You will not find directions listed as being anything other than north, east, west, and south in the Old Testament. You won't find in the Old Testament northeast, northwest, northwest. You won't find that. All you'll find is north, east, west, and south. Well, that just happens to be from the north to the south. And that's exactly where it will be in what we call Jordan today. He says, we will not see directions listed as anything other than north, east, south, west, and south in the Old Testament. Any direction from northeast to southeast was referred to as east. Southeast to southwest is south. Southwest to northwest is west. And northwest to northeast is north. Listen, this is something I've studied for years. And I've discovered things I was never taught. I never saw it in a book. But I got to looking at this thing and I said, by cracky, that's got to be what it is. So this burial zone will be anywhere from northeast to southeast of the Dead Sea. I rather suspect it will be to the southeast of the Dead Sea near Petra. I think that's where they're going to be buried, around Petra. It's got a nice enclosure on the north, nice enclosure on the south. If you put a wall up there, you don't have to wall it in, but that narrow channel down through there, that'll keep people out. Make a wonderful place for a graveyard. It's got a sandy base. Everything's going there fine. You can just stack them on top of one another. I don't think they're going to have a lot of respect for the burial ground of those people that came against them. Now let's take a look at verse 12. And 7 months shall the house of Israel be burying of them, that they may cleanse the land. Okay. 7 months. Now they're going to hit it real hard for 7 months. But they're going to be doing this for 7 years. So they're going to hit it real hard for a while. Verse 12 gives the length of time required to cover and bury the countless numbers of exposed bodies, 7 months. Now, you don't want to put anything over a dead bone. The Israelis are crazy about that. You don't put anything over a dead bone or a dead body, period. However, many bodies will be buried under massive landslides associated with earthquake activity, and it will be necessary to contain a search for a much longer period of time. This is the hot and heavy stuff that they get on the surface. In other words, they go around, they say, hey, there's a body over there. And they get that body and they take it over there and they bury it, put it on a cart or big something and take it over there and they bury it. I'm recounting this based on what they've got in the way of weapons, and I'm counting this on the foreknowledge of God, knowing exactly what kind of weapons they would have. And 7 months shall the house of Israel be burying of them, that they may cleanse the land. Now, let's look at verse 13. Yea, all the people of the land shall bury them. Everybody's going to be doing it. I mean, what they're going to do, they'll put up a flag over there. When they see a dead body. This is when they're first burying them. This is during that first 7 months. And they'll put that up, and then here come the people around it. It's organized. Israel's highly organized. And they will pick them up. They'll take them over there when they get a full load, and then boom, they'll bury them, and then they'll come back, and they'll still be picking up red flags for 3 or 4 months. Well, it says here, how many did I say? 7 months. Now, 13, and all the people of the land shall bury it. They all will. And it shall be to them a renown to the day that I shall be glorified, saith the Lord God. And you know where we're going to be? We're going to be right here glorifying God. We're going to be right here glorifying God. And I don't think we're going to be visible to them. Show me in the Bible where it says we're going to be visible to them. Just show me. I didn't learn that myself. Fred Stevenson, who was one of the greatest missionary Baptist scholars that ever lived, he's the one that suggested it to me. And he suggested the whole class because he didn't want to get in trouble at school. We knew that. And so I began to work on that. I couldn't find in the Bible where it said we'd be visible to them. We'll be here with them. You say, well, it doesn't say in there that we're not going to be invisible. I know. So I haven't contradicted anything. But I think that's where we're going to be, and we're going to be glorifying God, but I don't think they'll see us unless it's necessary. Who do you think is going to be the rods of iron on earth during tribulation period? Not during the tribulation period, but during the millennial reign. We are. You see, that ain't in the Bible. You check out those churches, the seven churches, and you'll discover that it says that we are the rods of iron. Us. And I suspect we'll be being used of God when there's a rebellion on the other side of the earth and God sends us over there and we apply a little punishment. Could I be wrong? Yes. But I'm telling you, this makes sense. And I'm satisfied with it. If anybody ever convinces me I'm wrong, I'll change. But I haven't found a scripture yet that refutiates what I've taught up to this particular time. He says, now what's going to happen after that? Well, they've still got a long time to go cleaning up the bones. You say, well, you're defining this too accurately. Sorry, I think God is very accurate. And I think a lot of our problem is we tried to cover up what he taught. And most of the stuff that's taught in different types of schools is wrong. But every once in a while, I'll find a teacher in one of those schools that I greatly admire, and I learn from him. And they shall sever out men of continual employment, passing through the land to bury the passengers that remain upon the face of the earth to cleanse it. After the end of 7 months shall they search. They'll go another 7 months. Now, here's the end of the 7 years. He says, verse 14. Advises us that the compulsory graveyard service of all the Israelites will end after 7 months, but a new system will be instituted to continue the search as long as required. It may work something like this. The nation of Israel will take some of its men employed in other aspects of continuous nation rebuilding and divert them to a full-time job of overseeing and performing the removal of the remaining bodies from the land. These full-time body disposers will work together with other Israelites, passengers that travel routinely through the land. That's what a passenger is. They travel through the land. when they see the wind blows over there, the land erodes, and bodies are discovered when they're digging. Verse 15. And the pastors that pass through the land, when any seeth a man's bone, shall then set up a sign by it, till the buriers have buried it in the valley of Hamon Gog. And also the name of the land shall be Hamanoah. They shall cleanse the land. At the end of that time, at the end of the 7 years, when that final part is finished, the lands will be cleansed. Verse 16, and it'll be 7 years. Verse 16 informs us there will be so many grave provider personnel that a city named Hamath will spring up by the Antichrist graveyard, since the name Hamoath means multitude. It is only, and that, this is straight out of King James translation, and that's what it means. It is only natural to assume the city is named in memory of the permanent residents. These next two articles were from 2004, 2006. And you've got the whole thing tonight. And you can look it over and see what you think. I have come to this conclusion over a long period of time. I will listen to what you have to say. And if I discover I'm wrong, I'll admit it. But this thing I could understand. I understood this before I understood, when is this attack going to occur? I didn't make up my mind about that until a couple of years ago. And then things that are going on over there right now, I know the Antichrist is going to arise out of this, and I do not believe it will be Bashar Assad, the president of Syria. That's not going to happen. But this guy is going to be clever. And they will have a period of time where what they call a Huda is declared after the initial attack. And the Huna will allow Israel to stay protected by God in the Negev wilderness. The Jordanians, which are Shemites, are going to go out there through the southern entrance into the Negev. And they are brothers with Israel. And they will be there to fight with them. There are a lot of things going on. Why do I do this? Well, I guarantee you, if I did it for money, I wouldn't be a missionary Baptist preacher. I'd fill myself with baloney. I'd have to be lost to do it. And I'd become a missionary, I'd become a Southern Baptist preacher and become wealthy.